Hi, everyone. Welcome to TimingResearch.com's Crowd Forecast News, episode number 197 for September 24th, 2018. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you listen to podcasts, I am also posting the audio-only version of every episode. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever else people listen to podcasts. So if you want to check that out, just pull up your favorite podcast platform and search for Timing Research. But if you're watching live or the video recording, you should see the PDF version of this week's report on your screen now while I'm talking. And you can also go to timingresearch.com/reports to download the PDF version of the report or read the browser version. So I have Mike Bassani back to moderate today. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me on again. Good afternoon, everybody. We've got a great panel here for Crowd Forecast News. It's Monday. The markets are, the markets are a little bit on edge. We have some political news coming out and circulating around today. And makes for kind of an interesting market as we go ahead for the last full week of September. So I'd like to give my panelists all a chance to introduce themselves. So first off, I'm going to start off with Lee Harris of EmojiTrading.com. Lee, tell us about yourself and what you do.
Thanks, Mike. So my name is Lee Harris from Emoji Trading. What we do at Emoji Trading is we write add-in software currently for Sierra Chart, but we've got other trading platforms in the pipeline for the very near future. And what our add-in software does is help you visualize the underlying supply and demand that's occurring in the market. So by making it easy to look at these supply and demand events that manifest themselves through patterns in the volume traded, you can make decisions at structural levels, and you can really start to really improve your entries, your targets, and trade in a more confident basis than just by trading with candlestick price action alone.
Thank you, sir. Jim Kenny of Option Professor, how about yourself? You want to tell us a little about
how to get a hold of you? Yeah, I provide the content for the Option Professor and their DVDs, and basically Option Professor's education on all the different uses of the options, both from a income cash flow purpose and a hedging purpose, using them against positions that you own to try to bracket the liability you have and sometimes the upside. And then, of course, using them for limited risk speculation. And, of course, all the different tactics, you know, the two-sided trades like straddle strangles and spreads and all those type of things. So there's a lot to learn with options, and we've been doing it for decades. So that's what I do over there.
Thank you, Jim. And Roy Swanson of Steady Trader. Roy, tell us about yourself and what you do.
Hi. At Steady Trader, we do short-term swing trading, basically because we believe you can only predict the weather a few days out. So our positions are held typically for 1 to 5 days. We use price trend, repriced trend indicators, the RMO indicator, a few wilder equations like the BDI, BDX3, things like that, and good old-fashioned order book on balance volume. We plug them together in our own secret sauce and try to identify short-term trends.
Thank you, sir. Lastly, myself, I'm Mike Pisani of SmartOptionTrading.com. What I do over there is I use the option flow throughout the day to tell me where the money's moving, what sectors or what names are in play that day. And I use technical setups to help combine that with the option flow. So it gives me more than one reason to get into a trade. So throughout the day, I call the option flow. I'm live for 2+ hours a day. And you get a nightly video and a morning video to tell you what I'm looking at or what I traded and what I like that day. So whether you're a day trader or a swing trader, I have you covered over there. All right. So now we've all introduced ourselves. Interesting start to the week here. And we know the first two questions here, you know, the first one is, which direction do you think the S&P 500 will go this week from Monday's open to Friday's close? And, you know, the people who answer this question are kind of leaning a little bit bearish here this week, guys. So I think what I would like you guys to do is just answer question one and then question two, what percent you think of that. And then we'll come back and go into the details if that sounds okay with you guys today. So let's start off with Lee. Lee, where do you think the market's going from here this week? And what's your percent of confidence?
Sure. Having watched the morning session on the S&P, my opinion's changed. Initially, I was thinking we've got to go higher to end the week lower. But for some structural issues now, I'm feeling we're going to end the week higher. The only part I'm wavering about, I'm going to say I'm sort of 78% confident in terms of ending the week, is we have got so much macro stuff happening from Wednesday onwards that I'm not absolutely certain that we will necessarily end higher, depending upon what the macro stuff does. But I'm certain at some point during the week, we're going to go higher than we saw at the highs last week, for sure.
Thank you, sir. Jim, same questions, just answering from here. Higher, lower, and what's your percent of confidence here?
Yeah, I think it is on the defensive here, and unless it gets bailed out by the data at the end of the week that Lee was talking about, you know, like durable goods and GDP numbers and retail and wholesale inventories and personal income, Chicago PMI. So there's a lot of stuff, plus obviously the Fed rate decision. So there's a lot hitting the fan here. But as I said on my podcast on Friday, market was going to definitely pull back in my view, and it's definitely doing that. But I'm just seeing it right now as a pullback. So where would it be by the end of the week? I would say that it has the chance of going back down towards 2,900, 2,850 on a worst case scenario. And on a best case scenario, I think it kind of meanders between 2,900, 2,930, you know, basically sideways. So sideways to a little bit lower would be my bet, and I'd put it at about 60%.
Thank you, sir. Roy, to you as well. High or lower in percent of confidence here?
I'm looking at lower. My accuracy rate with our method is roughly 80%, so I'll stick with 80% on the low side. Not only 80% confidence in my prediction that it'll be a little lower. I'm not predicting, you know, a lot lower. I think we all know we've got a pretty much range bound situation. But not only do my indicators show lower, but you know, it's the end of the month and the end of a quarter, and there have been some decent gains over the last 6 weeks or so. So I think, you know, you're going to see the fund managers taking those gains, and there's just so much politically going on, not just the macroeconomic data, but political stuff that's going to hit the fan Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It doesn't look like any of it's going to be happy, no matter what way things are.
Yeah, that's a great point. For me this week, from here, I'm saying we're going to go higher, and I'm going to put it at a 70% chance, because this market, every time it's had the chance to sell off, they buy it back. So I'm going to keep it simple. I agree with all the concerns you guys are bringing up here, and we're going to go into those in details. Now, guys, I invite you to pull charts up at this point, show something on your screen you want to talk. So I'm going to go back to you, Lee. You said higher. I'm going higher. So that's two of us higher and two of us lower here. So why do you think we're going to end up this week higher here?
So I'm just going to pull up a really simple daily chart. So I think you can see that now. So what I've got here is daily chart of the ES futures, which is what I trade. And one of my feelings about higher is towards the end of last week, I was noticing this gap around here, thinking that, you know, I'm interested to see what happens when we fill it. And before that, middle of last week, I was looking at this range bound area between 2871 and where are we here? 2923.
We're damn close to filling it here.
Yeah, I think we were, well, it filled it on my chart earlier today. I still think we've got to go lower than lower today. I switched off my data feed about half an hour ago, but we've got some order flow indicating that we haven't gone as low as we're going to go. But one of the things, well, two things really stand out for me. At the bottom of the chart here, I've got open interest on the contract, but I've turned it into an oscillator. And what I'm noticing is, although we are below the rolling moving average for monthly open interest, we are consistently less low. So what I noticed today was actually the open interest figure reports for today or yesterday was lower, and we increased up. So we are less negative than we've been. I'm seeing these rising negative values. So although we're below average, we are less and less below average. So it makes me think that now we've had the pullback and the gap's been closed and we're around the level of this previous high, I think we're starting to get participation in the market again. So that's my first feeling, that we're going to go higher. Also, I'm looking at the level throughout in the future, and we're, 29, well, the high was 29.45-ish. And, you know, we're a push away from a beautiful round number of 3,000. And I'm thinking, you know, we've got a magnet there. We've got signs of participation increasing. So I'm thinking the trend we have is likely to continue. I'm only tempering this because of the amount of macro stuff towards the end of the week. And, of course, it's end of quarter, as was mentioned. So I'm confident in my bias. To pinpoint it to 3 o'clock on Friday, I get a little bit nervous, but I'm happy with my bias.
Thank you. good reasons. We'll come back to you because I was also bullish. I have some things we'll go over with you in a minute. Jim, you were down, so let's go to you next. You're saying 60%
chance to go lower. I'm sideways to a little bit lower. Okay. To a little bit lower. I think the thing could be contained. I mean, obviously, if we're at 29.15 on the S&P or whatever, you know, 28.90, 2900 should be as low as it gets. Unless something more significant is going on. So, and then now you've got a gap between 29.20 and change and 29.30. So what could very well happen is we drift a little bit lower and then maybe it's sell the rumor by the fact with the Fed, and maybe it's happy days are here again with these reports at the end of the week, and then we get back on the bicycle. You know, we've got a situation where you cannot forget about the macro view out there, which is the lower taxes and the repat money and the dereg. And all of that is very, very positive, and it's not going away overnight. You know, I think a lot of things going on here is very reckless behavior that's only being able to be absorbed because of the change in the tax laws and the amount of money being made in stocks. But I think at some point, all this reckless activity, if it does come into play, you know, with something negative happening in the economy or something like that, would be very dangerous. But my macro thing is this: we're pulling back now a little bit. By November, December, it's a possibility that we take off. And you certainly don't want to be wasting a lot of money in September if October, November, December are going to be very, very good harvest months. You want to be careful to not chew up a lot of capital during this period of time.
Well, let me come back to you because you're kind of neutral. Do you think the Fed decision is already baked in? I mean, does anybody think the Fed is not going to raise rates at this point on Wednesday?
No, of course it's already baked in, but the statement's not baked in. And if the statement is, you know, because I've never heard a Fed guy talk more positively about the stock market, and I never really heard him talk that much about the stock market, nor a president. So we've got different stuff going on here now, and if he comes out with a statement that is off the chart bullish or something, you know, optimistic, you know, that could have an effect that's not baked in. So the statement is probably more than important than the activity right now.
I agree with you there. Roy, let's go to you. You said down. You said 80%.
Yeah, that's basically the, you know, the confidence I get with my indicators, and we're generally 80% right. So, you know, I do think the Fed is sort of a non-event. It has been for quite a while now. It gets baked in. And honestly, I'm not sure it matters whether or not they raise interest rates this time or not. I don't think the market's going to respond much either way. But, you know, trade wars are real. And we're seeing it this morning. I mean, it's starting to sink in. What's going on?
You think this gap down this morning is over the trade wars?
Especially with China, yeah.
Even though that was already known before, like early last week, you think that they just wait until they were actually interacted, or?
Yeah. I mean, when you file this, they always wait until you know, they actually get implemented, because there have been occasions where last minute waffling has happened on some of these tariffs. Not often, but there were a couple occasions. And this time, you know, they went through, and this is a big one. And you know, again, I think there have been a few of these announcements now, and I think it's definitely sinking in that the trade war is a real fact. And the markets, obviously, they never like this stuff, so they're reacting.
So, what's your catalyst to get the market lower, or is that it? It's just going to be a steady bleed down from the trade war, the tariffs being interacted.
You know, and I rarely succumb to talking about politics, but I mean, we have three of the major political firestorms in the country hitting all this week. We've got the Kavanaugh thing, we've got the Mueller thing now with Rosenstein, and we've got we have an address coming at the UN on Wednesday, which, you know, typically these addresses create chaos economically because they disrupt the you know, the economic order that's been around for a few decades. So you've got three disruptive. And again, I don't know which way any of them are going to go, but that's a lot to hit in 1 week. Not to mention that there have been gains again. It is the end of a quarter. And what we've been seeing more and more is that that the fund managers are taking their profits a little early. I don't think they're going to wait until Friday to take the money.
So the Rosenstein is not going to resolve itself till Thursday is what I'm reading. Is that?
I don't know.
Well, UN. Trump's in the UN for the next 3 days, so he won't be back at the White House till Thursday.
Yeah. All I'm saying is we've got three of the, you know, the biggest flashpoints in America hitting in the next few days. So it's like, you know, as much as I trade every day by data, this is one of those weeks that is just, you know, it's wacky. A lot of stuff.
Okay.
And it's not just Rosenstein and Mueller. It's also the address. It's also the tariff. tariffs. And the Kavanaugh thing is just getting bigger and bigger as we speak. So things are nutty.
So for me this week, I'm going to remain bullish on these markets here. And the reason is that, you know, I have a chart up here in the SPX because we went ex-divi on Friday on the SPY. So it's not as clean. But here we are. We're still holding the 8-day. All we've done here is pull back to the 8-day and reconnect it here. And we've pretty much just about filled this little gap that I think Lee was pointing out on the ES. And, you know, this market has every reason to want to sell off, and it won't. And a couple of you guys, and feel free to debate me with this, have talked about market fund managers taking money out. Where are they taking it out from at this point? Because I've seen nothing but steady outflows in this market, and most of the money's on the sidelines right now. And I just see them playing with very specific names, but overall, they have not really been buying the general markets here for the last month or so. And, you know, if you look at it, the individual names like AMD and, you know, Netflix is up big today, but for the most part, I mean, they've just been playing individual names. So I'm not sure that they're taking profits here. I just think that it's just a lack of utter buying here that's really keeping this market from moving higher. They're not buying sectors or names. They're kind of just playing around in individual names. They're not trying to move the markets. They're just trying to play names. So I do think that eventually this market's going to get into chase mode if it starts to go again, as all these managers are going to be caught flat here and have nowhere to go, and they're going to have to come and start chasing this market. What do you guys think about that? Is that something we think could happen here, especially if it's a very hawkish Fed press conference? Anybody want to jump in?
Well, I think, this is Roy. I think they will chase the market. I just think this week is a week where they will take what gains they've made on individual names, because sectors are not particularly accurate right now. But there have been some gains, and, August was pretty good, and there have been some gains, and it's their job to take the gains while they're real and, you know, pop the money back in on Monday.
Well, three sectors got pretty much some profit taking going on. That's the industrials, the materials, and the banks. So, you know, they're pretty sharp drops to the downside. They gap down, particularly in some of the ETFs. So, you know, there are people taking money off the table. I think that's for sure.
So let's go back to the banks real quick. Are you surprised that they're giving all these, you know, we had a day and a half of gains and they're basically giving it all back here ahead of the Fed. Are you surprised there's not more running at this point with the interest rates up?
I think they got to pay more on deposits, and I think the loan demand's not that tremendous. And so I think their profit margins are not as great as people thought because of the yield curve. And I think basically they're kind of still stuck. But if the market goes nuts in November and December, I'm sure the three that I just mentioned will get back on the horse. But that's the big if right now.
Lee, back to you. You say you only pretty much trade the ES. What are you seeing there? I haven't seen any big selling on the ES the last couple of days. Even with Friday's rebalancing, it looked pretty calm.
Yeah, I look at a market profile, I can see that, you know, Friday was pretty much a balanced day. Today, up until about half an hour ago, looked balanced. So, you know, I'm not really seeing a market that's trying to push in any particular direction. You know, this gap was interesting, but, you know, it's filled it. The day is still very balanced. So I think because of the amount of macro stuff coming up towards the end of the week, you know, today, tomorrow, we're just going to be going backwards and forwards in a range until we actually get a direction from the macro stuff. The open interest has caught my attention that, you know, we are consistently less negative over the past week or two. So I'm looking at that thinking, you know, end of the quarter, as you say, you know, people have been taking money out. But it's kind of dribbling in from a weak point. And that makes me, when your comment about, you know, going to chase mode, I can see that happening, whether it's this week or next week. Like some of the other guys, you know, I trade each day based on what the day is giving me. I don't take an overnight view. I don't take a weekly view. But my bias is to the upside.
Thank you. Roy, let's go back to you. How about oil as a catalyst? Oil is finally breaking this range it's been in, trying to head back towards that high of the 75. I mean, I know Trump has been out tweeting and against OPEC, unhappy with oil prices, but if oil goes, doesn't that wake up an energy sector, a big component of the markets, and couldn't that really get us moving?
I think it could. I guess I'm not seeing that really happening right now, but anything's possible. Yeah.
Is oil that big? Is oil that big of a component in the indexes?
Well, the energy space, the energy names are.
Okay.
Think about all your big, large cap energy names like Chevron, ExxonMobil, BP, Oxy, APC, Rig, which has been up huge, right? So all these names, big components.
Yeah. Now the oils are doing good. ConocoPhillips and even Anadarko's moving as well. So yeah, there's no question. I don't know if that's enough to drag the indexes up. That's the key, because tech seems to be definitely on a timeout mode. And like I say, the industrials were doing well. Now they're rolled over. Materials were trying to do well. They rolled over. Banks were trying to do well. Then they rolled over. So I don't know that oil is going to offset all that, but it could, I guess.
You know, I'm just looking for something different. You know, this market always likes to rotate, right? Mm-hmm. And like today, we saw a little bit of a rotation back into tech this morning. But for the most part, they've been playing with somebody pointed out they're buying the industrials last week and some large caps and the banks. You know, where do they go play next? If they want to keep this market afloat but don't want to sell it off, they're going to rotate back. So the question is, where are they going to rotate from here?
Oil definitely looks like a place.
That's kind of where I'm coming from, is mm-hmm. that could be the next catalyst that gives this market a nice little pop to the high side. All right. Anybody have any further comments on the market this week, where we're going or how we're going to get there?
I was just thinking last week with the run-up that we had into new highs. Obviously, I always come from the scheme of if everyone's buying, somebody's selling, right? And so it just made a nice big run-up last week, and it looked very frothy to me. That's why on my podcast, I said look for it to roll over. And if you own stock and you want to do some call selling up here, not a bad idea. And if you want to sell some calls and buy some puts to hedge, that's not a bad idea. You know, I was listening to Fox News, and they were going to bring that Charles Payne on last week. And before they brought him on, they played this Sly and the Family Stone song, "I Want to Take You Higher." And I just said to myself, we're making new highs. It's going nuts on the upside, and they're playing Sly and the Family Stone. I think it has to be at a somewhat of a high point right now. I hung up and I said,
thank you for making me laugh very much. I was looking at some of the answers and respondents here, and none of us has brought up the pre-midterm election sentiment. I honestly don't see that in play here right now in this market. Maybe it's me. I just don't think that comes into play until we get closer to the November elections. Is there anybody that thinks that is something that's going to come into effect this week?
No, but it's going to come in effect in November and December, which is where the things could get very, very crazy. And if things get very, very crazy, because I think a lot of people are betting Democrats are going to do things. And if they don't, there's a lot of people are going to be on the wrong side of their trades. And that's going to cause a lot of reversing. And order imbalances are how you get these gaps. So, you know, if you get everybody leaning of an outcome that doesn't occur, we saw that when Trump, got elected, everyone got leaning one way and then they had to go the other way. So I think that's what many people are looking for in November, December, is everyone starts leaning that the Democrats, because all this news, obviously, come on, Kavanaugh is in a big mess. Rosenstein's in a big mess. We're poking sticks at Iran and everybody else. So there's a lot of big messes out there, which have people betting, I think, a little bit that the outcome won't be favorable to the Republicans. So if they're all betting that way, and then they all have to reverse because it does go their way, that I think is how you get crazy numbers in November and December. And also interest rates, the way they slow things down is they hike interest rates. And obviously with 3,000 on the S&P, they're looking to slow things down a bit. And if you go 3,300 on the S&P, these rates could go a lot higher than they're looking right now as well. So I'm just really looking for a very exciting fourth quarter. And the breakout to new highs, that's not bearish. I mean, as far as, if you wanted to see an acceleration to the upside, you certainly had to take out 2875, and they did that.
Now they did it, and they didn't look back.
No. So, this thing can feed. We have a president that is basically a motivational speaker. And, he's going to get on there, and he's going to start making buying stock, tantamount to a money market probably. And so people are going to start buying into the stocks as if there's no risk in them. And that's really, the end of the phase. So I would be careful on the next big rally, because I think when you throw caution out the window and you start buying stocks talks like there's some kind of a for sure. And that could very well happen if the Republicans get in there and he starts getting on there about how the strongest ever, the best ever, incredible, brilliant. I mean, he's got all the buzzwords to get you motivated, you know?
Well, he's good at that. He's very good at that.
He got Norman Vincent Peale on speed dial, you know what I mean?
So let me switch it up here a bit. Let me take some look at Roy back involved here for a second. What about the 3% magic interest rate that everybody's been looking at? Does that play into this market? Does this market care anymore about that whenever bonds get over 3% yield?
Roy just left the room. I guess he's having some technical problems.
Okay, let's go back to Lee with that one then. Thanks, David.
Frankly, yield is not something I follow to that extent. I look at the levels and I take things day by day.
Okay. To me, I think that CNBC made such a big deal out of that, right, when we hit that initial 3% and we kept getting above it. And I just think the market is now immune to that at this point. I think that's the one thing this market does is it gets immune to things quickly. Even when we talk about the tariffs, personally, I thought the China response was very muted this time. You know, 5 to 10% on $60 billion versus we did 25% on $200 billion. I know they don't have the same amount of money, but I really feel like at this point the market just doesn't really care so much about it if it stops here. In other words, if they stop talking in the press and it stops here, I don't think the market really cares anymore. I think this is becoming a non-event in the market. You don't even see the gyrations intraday when something's announced. And so
I think that's because the gas is much stronger than the brake. In other words, the Fed hiking these little quarter of a point pale in the comparison to the economic numbers and the corporate profits. So as long as the gas is much stronger than the brake, it doesn't matter what the brake is doing.
Good point.
Mike, I think Roy's back.
Roy, are you back with us?
Yeah, I got knocked off for a minute.
No problem. Welcome back. We were talking a little bit about the 3% yield curve on bonds and how we don't think it's a player in the market anymore. The market doesn't care. Do you have any opinion on that?
Yeah, I tend to agree. It doesn't seem to be having an effect. And there's been quite a bit of air pushed around about it. So.
All right. So let's move on to our next question, guys. And this was really... what indicator influences your trading the most? So, Roy, since you were out for a bit, why don't we start with you? And some of the things they were talking about here was moving averages, RSI, seasonality, VIX, MACD, Fibonacci's, price action, Elliott Wave, RSI again. What do you look at most? What are some of the ones that influence you the most that you use on a daily basis?
Well, I use a combination of three. I use the Raoul Mohindar Oscillator, the RMO index, which is really one of my favorites. And it tends to identify changes in direction. And then I overlay that with a few basic Wilder things, the PDI, MDI, the ADX3, and good old fashioned OBV on the order book, on balance volume on the order book. I mean, I'm really all about identifying stocks that are in a trend that's moving up and, catching on to that for just a few days and getting off.
If you had to people who are out there who don't have the expertise that we do, is there one that you would recommend the most to get them started?
I would say the ADX3, Wilder's ADX3.
Can you tell them a little bit about it?
It's just the 3-day directional moving average. It takes an average of the past 3 days. It's very simple to read. It's either plus one, minus one, or zero, if it's neutral. And it just is a good indicator of whether or not, you know, a stock is in, has some momentum one way or the other.
Thank you. Lee, let's go to you. What indicators do you use the most every day? You know, which ones are your favorites?
Sure. So I use absolutely no price-based indicators. I may keep an awareness of where some of the popular price-based indicators are, pivot points, fibs, big moves, but only so that I've got a sense of what other people are looking at. All I look at is the traded volume on the bid and the ask. So I will visualize that. I'll visualize market structure using market profile and volume profile. On a volume profile, I'm looking for signs of absorption and exhaustion. To look at absorption, I'm looking at the difference between the ask volume and the bid volume. So I run a profile of what's known as the delta, and I also run a profile of the volume. And I look at this on different time frames, and to bring some of this to life, I use some of the proprietary emoji indicators that bring out supply and demand events. But they all, you know what, they all encapsulate up into absorption, exhaustion, and aggression. So I just look at the impact of the traded volume and how volume is behaving at certain structural price levels. And I use that to make my trading decisions.
Thank you very much. Jim. Options professor, you guys teach options, but all do you guys teach about indicators, or what do you teach your students there to look at?
I think the moving averages on a short, intermediate, long-term basis are very, very important to follow, obviously right off the bat as far as I'm concerned. I think the VIX is a fairly reasonable thing to follow as well. In the last period of time, it seems like 15 is an equilibrium, and it seems like 20 is excessively high, and 11 and that area is low. So the VIX I find to be interesting. I think if the VIX gets above 20 or 25, you have got to be very prepared for something substantial to happen on the downside. And I also like to look at the chart formations and how far the markets are from the averages. I have found it to be very, very effective to look at things that get way away from the averages, like Amazon did at 2050 and other companies have done, and Boeing did a while back, and many of them have. And then look for a chart formation that shows some kind of an exhaustion, and then look for a reversion back to the mean. So the moving averages and the VIX and the chart formations and the distance away from the moving averages are some of the main things that I think have some consistency to them.
Is there one you would recommend to somebody learning more than others?
It's kind of a soup, you know what I mean? And if you just want to have water in your soup, it's not going to taste very well. So, you know, like most things that are a fusion, I think it's important to kind of have a mixture in there, not just hang it on one solid thing. Certainly, the moving averages, though, are the base, because that's the price and time. And that is a pretty factual thing, as opposed to just arbitrary opinion. So, you know, the factual move of price and time, I think, is important. And I just think when they get very overdone from those averages, if you can combine it with a chart formation that shows a little bit of an exhaustion one way or the other and play it for a swing the other way. Option, you know, obviously when you go way, way up away from the moving averages and, you know, the put premiums are going to be very, very much down. And ergo, if you can find a little bit of a turn formation in the chart and you throw in a cheap put looking for a pullback, and it's a company that is very volatile, like an Amazon, you know, you can go $100 off the price very, very quickly, which it did. And as an example with Amazon, we were at about 1500 on the 200 day and went to 2050. Well, by any measure, that's going to be a pretty overbought thing. And as soon as it, as soon as it starts showing a little bit of a turn, you know, taking a shot at it is not the worst idea in the world.
Thank you, sir. So for me, I kind of agree with you. You have to put a bunch of different things together, right, to get the overall picture. So I'm a big fan of the moving averages, especially the 8 and the 21 day. And right now I have a chart up here of AMD. And, you know, AMD, by your standards and everybody's standards, has been just this monstrous move, riding up here, riding the 8 day, which is the blue line, doesn't want to pull back. And I like to use that. And I like to look at overall just the option flow and sentiment. And I combine that with just a couple things going on, right? I look at RSI to see how hot it is. Some names can get embedded over in RSI, embedded overbought, right? That means they can stay that way for a lot longer than others. Where names like the banks, typically, as soon as they get a hot RSI, they sell off. So you learn how some of this moves. And then you look at the Bollinger Bands, because usually most names, when they get out of the Bollinger Bands, they have a tendency to revert back in it. And you can see AMD has actually been textbook. Every time you can see it gets out of the Bollinger Bands here, it reverts back in, and it tends to come back and reconnect with the 8-day at that point where we've been holding. And now you have this nice couple-week consolidation going on here. And boy, the call buying this afternoon is really heated up again in this name after being quiet for a couple days. And we take out Friday's high, you know, that to me where the volume. I think that's where Roy was talking about the volume. Volume comes in, and that's when you want to look to get into that name. You see the call buying, you see it's made room, it's consolidated room to breathe. And I think those are some of the things I look for. So I agree with you on the moving averages, and then put the Bollinger Bands on top of that, because it tells you when it's getting, if you can't tell by looking at the naked eye, it helps give you that idea when a name is getting stretched in either direction or the other. Any, let's start off. Lee, anything else to add in this section for this segment?
I was mused here about Bollinger. I was a big fan of Bollinger Bands about 15 years ago. And I remember when John Bollinger published his book, which I think was Bollinger on Bollinger Bands. And I was getting into bandwidth and normalized volume and all that kind of thing. But for me personally, there is no substitute for volume. You know, granted, I'm trading products which are, you know, centralized, exchange-based, you know, stocks, of course, you're not getting the full picture on volume. But I think back to when the trading pits were there. If you were trading in the trading pits as a local, you would just be seeing how much was being bought and sold. Was the guy from JP Morgan coming, approaching the pit, and did you try to get a sense of what he was up to and follow him? And for me, you know, I think it's all about follow the big money, be on the right side of what most people are doing, and just be mindful of when it stops happening or when someone bigger is on the sidelines and absorbing everything else that's going on. With that, I think you can ignore every price-based indicator if you can read the volume.
Trading pits. There's got to be people out there that have no idea what the trading pit is anymore that are coming into this market right now.
Damn it, I feel
Roy, how about yourself? Anything else to add?
I don't think so at this point, but I like the comment about the trading pits.
It's true, though.
It's true.
It really is. It's
very world. True.
Jim, anything else you'd like to add?
No. The only thing, you guys that are obviously continuing to think that the prices are rising, I just was noticing that, this market has not taken out a previous reaction of any size. And right now, that last reaction we had around 2850 on the S&P, unless we take that 2850 out, it is most logical to think that the pullbacks are all buying opportunities at this point.
Again, I could tell you one thing, and I watch the option flow all day long, and I'm still watching it here and posting for my service while we're talking, and there's no big protection coming in here, right? There's no scrambling for protection today. There's no massive put buying coming into this market today. I think they got spooked on the Rosenstein news, and that kind of, if you look at the chart, we had that little rally going and it came out right at that point. And I wouldn't be surprised if this market regains higher area before the day closes. This tends to be the, they tend to come in and buy the weakness late in the day at this point.
Lee, did you notice the volume drying up a little bit on Friday when the market, stopped going up?
Let me just have a look. I'm pulling up Friday now. Bum, 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 bum. So I'm just going to have a look at my short-term chart. You know what? Let be nice and let's share this. Okay. So what I've got here is my short-term trading chart, and I'm just going to condense it down a bit. There we go. And let's find Friday. So that was the 21st. So as we look around the highs, this big pink band here, which is emoji order flow suite. We were getting exhaustion. So certainly, as you would expect near a high, what we had going on here on Friday the 21st, at the overnight high, we had some big passive selling as we went up during the first hour. We were just getting weaker and weaker in terms of the buying power. So certainly the amount of aggressive buying was falling, and it was being met by stronger passive sellers with limit orders. So, that's a really good sign that you wouldn't want to be buying up at those levels. So it's not so much that, the volume was drying out, but certainly the amount of aggressive buying was falling.
Thank you. All right. So, 100% of a question. So we'll hit this real quick. We'll start off with you, Lee, since you're on here already. Tech has been weak during September. Do you expect it to recover and strengthen in October, or is this the start of a new trend?
Yeah, tech is really interesting. I caught an article in the past 3 or 4 weeks where five stocks represents 51% or so of the S&P 500. And I think that's something really interesting to track. Now, what I'm mindful of in terms of tech is obviously we're going to hear about Q3 results as we get into October. But we've also got Black Friday coming up. We've got the holidays. So it's the biggest season, of course, for the tech companies, certainly from a hardware perspective. So from a personal point, I think the kind of tech that is there for the big names as a consumer is not particularly exciting. There's no great reason to buy. There is still more and more stuff coming out. One company that has caught my attention a bit, partly because of previous exposure to this industry, is Sonos, and they've got their IPO coming, I believe, in the next few months.
Sonos. Is there out? The speaker
maker. Audio company. Yes.
They went public a while ago.
Oh, okay. So I'm interested to watch that because I think as a brand, I think, they're feeling lots of pressure from the smart speaker manufacturers, so Google, Amazon, etc. And I think they could be an interesting barometer as to the dominance of Google and Amazon, certainly in the hardware space. But I'm not sensing any great lack of appetite from consumers for hardware. So I think during fourth quarter of the year with Black Friday and peak, people are going to continue buying plastic gadgets. Let's see what the earnings tell us early in Q1.
Thank you, sir. Roy, how about you? Do you think this tech sell-off in September continues, or do we start to recover in October as earnings kick in?
Not in October. No, I think tech is definitely experiencing a drag in a number of fronts. I mean, just look at, you know, of the FANG, you've got the first two are, you know, basically been announcing slower growth for a while now. Apple just had their big fall show and nothing really to excite consumers, that at least that I caught. And Facebook, you know, they said quite a while ago, their last call, that you know, growth projections are looking slower. So
thank you, Jim. Same question to you.
I just had a question, Mike. If you could put a chart up that would show the S&P 500 and then the RSI.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Give me one second.
And I just want, because I have found in history, and my history is getting longer by the minute, that if there is a big new high and then the RSI is lagging, sometimes that is an indicator that you know, that the high was created on short covering, or the high was created on weak whatever hands or whatever.
RSI is trading around 58. When it made its high, it did briefly touch the hot zone of 70, which, you know, is not unusual for the SPY to pull off a 70, though it can stay hot for a while when it wants to.
But where was it when we hit the high in January?
Well, that was screaming hot on that run-up. It was almost 85. It was over 85, 87.
I got you. So the RSI on this particular run-up did not take out the RSI high or go near the RSI high from January.
But that's a rarity. We never get RSIs on the SPY like that. I mean, that happens once every couple of years.
I got you. So in this particular case, you can't extrapolate too much out of it.
Unfortunately not.
Although the RSI does look like it is having some trouble in that 70 area. Huh?
Well, I mean, that's typical, right? ETFs get hot. The ETFs don't generally get extremely hot, not like names like NVIDIA or AMD, right? They typically get hot and they sell a little bit off. And one of the things for me is the SPY was extended off the 8-day when we made the high this week. Not a surprise, we pulled in a little bit. So anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just was wondering if there was something there. It didn't look like there's anything there. But, you know, that was just one thing that I thought might be helpful. But in this particular case, it doesn't look like it's that tremendous of a divergence. You know, I was looking for a divergence where it's dramatically underperforming RSI while you're making new highs. That historically to me has been definitely a yellow flag, you know.
Yeah, great point. For me, I'm going to make it real quick on tech. The Qs, you had this long uptrend here that we have been dancing back and forth across now for the last couple of weeks and mostly staying below it other than quick breaks above it. Until we take back this uptrend, I am going to be cautious on tech overall, but I will continue to play momentum names like AMD and Netflix today, which are looking good, right? We're holding this 50-day moving average. So people asking that, we've held this. You see that purple line? We've held this every time we've hit it here on the Qs since we made our lows back here, earlier in the year. So, I mean, it's hard to get real bearish on it, but I don't know if it's going to recover until we get earnings. And I would keep an eye on this one after a bad earnings last time, right? Netflix is the first big name to report. I believe they report on the 16th or 18th of October. They're early. And, you know, look at today. Again, they're buying this uptrend back today off the 50-day, and they're engulfing this range again. So I think you have to watch the big names like this to see if they want to go. Because if these things start to go, then I think you can get a bounce in tech, but watch the overall cues. So we got about 10 minutes left. So I think what I'd like to do here is I'll start off with you, Roy, is give us something you're watching for today. And then please tell us how to get a hold of yourself and your service. And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, we're at steadytrader.com. We offer reports on the using the indicators that I've been talking about today. And we also have a free book, Read This First Before You Buy Stock, which we downloaded about 12,000 copies. It's a pretty good read, and urge everyone to come and grab it. Let me just see if I can pull up today's portfolio. Hold on. I don't think anything's going anywhere though with the down market. Yeah, we always wait for the morning to see if our picks are continue to go up in the morning, and none of them have. They're all succumbing to the overall pressure. So I've got nothing. I'm watching today. It's been very slow for us for about the last 3-4 days. That's it. Hello,
Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike. Are we losing?
Sorry. I had myself on mute. Ask people in my service. I do that all the time. Jim, what are you watching for the rest of the week? Trade you're looking for?
I tell you, there's three things happening right now that you'd want to keep an eye on if you're a short-term trader, particularly. Like I said on my podcast last week, you know, selling calls against these big run-ups that you saw was definitely a good idea. The I could tell things were just very frothy on a short-run basis, and those calls, because the market had run up, were pretty darn fat. So when things run way up, you know, they generally generally will go into some type of consolidation or pullback. And so taking advantage of short-term calls on a covered call basis or collars is really very effective. So again, that's not a bad thing. But right now, I'm concerned about three things. One is the Dow Jones Transport broke under 11,500. And on a short-term basis, I don't find that very constructive. Second thing is the Russell, which has been the sweetheart, you know, been running. It broke under 1,700 today. So keep an eye on that. And then the VIX is up 8% today at 1263. If it were to break above 15, I think then the pullback would be something more concerning. So you've got a couple of yellow flags here and something that's starting to move higher, but certainly not in the danger zone yet. But keep an eye on the two. The Transports and the Russell were big leaders on the way up, and you don't want them to give up all too much of their ground. And they're starting to give up some ground a little bit further than I'd like. You got turnaround Tuesday possibly tomorrow, though, so keep an eye on that. So if they can get through Tuesday and turn this thing around, that'd be positive. And again, later in the week, as Lee was talking about and everybody's talking about, we got a lot of stuff hitting the fan. So and of course, we got the end of the quarter. You know, end of the quarter could be either way. Either you've been out of the market and you got a window dress, or you've got a lot of gains and you want to get paid for the quarter. Either way, it can cause some activity. And that's what Lee, I think, was referring to by the end of the week. But again, those three things that I just mentioned, the Transports, the Russell, and the VIX, keep an eye on those, particularly the Transports and the Russell, because you don't want the strong guys giving it up. Every week, I do have a podcast, and I go over all the different markets, from the stock market and also the interest rate market. So if you're in bonds, a lot of people are in bonds getting whacked pretty hard here, and I explain some of the things that are going on there and some ways to maybe mitigate that risk a bit. So that's important. And then I also go over some of the different commodities that have been way out of favor, and the U.S. dollar, which I had said on my broadcast at 97 was rolling over to the downside, and that has been going on a little bit. So I cover a lot of stuff on the podcast. And if you go to optionprofessor@gmail.com, they can shoot me an email and I'll make sure they get the link. And then every week you can keep up to date on what I'm seeing and what I'm thinking.
Jim, thanks again for being on. Always love doing a show with you. Roy, what are you looking for this week? What trades are you looking at potentially to take? And please tell us how we can get a hold of you in your service.
Yeah, you already called on me on this round.
Oh, sorry, Lee, I got myself mixed up here just at this point. I got my names out of order.
No worries. For today, what is screaming at me on my chart today is that on ES, the low of the day has a volume pattern, which we call unfinished business from unfinished auction. Basically, it means that at the low price of the day, we did not run out of sellers. So on that basis, you subscribe to auction theory. We need to find that price or a slightly lower price to see if we do run out of sellers. So if I was looking to continue to trade today, I would be looking for an opportunity to sell the ES with a target of the low of the day, which is 29.17 and three quarters. Having just turned on my data feeds, I saw 23.5. So, you know, I'd be looking for 6 points on the downside. I'd be looking for a nice entry. That would be the trade I'd be looking for the rest of the day. For the rest of the week, I would expect tomorrow, again, to be quite balanced and go nowhere, because we're just going to be waiting ahead of all this news. So that's kind of where my attention is. In terms of emoji trading, well, our website is www.emojitrading.com. We've got lots of information there about some of the supply and demand events, which we help visualize by interpreting traded volume, and have a read of that site. You can try our software on a 30-day free trial. We're always happy to engage in email discussion with people. And we've also got a bunch of videos explaining some of these concepts at www.youtube.com/emoji trading.
Hey, Mike, are you muted again?
I'm having problems. I keep hitting my button and it's not coming off. I think my mic is breaking again. I just ran over the other one and had to go buy a new one. So that'll be great. Another purchase going to make today. Thank you very much for being on with us. For myself, I'm watching a couple of things this week. One, there's been big time call buying again in AMD today, and it's been flagging constant upgrades. And, you know, anybody who's not in this name is going to mark it up for the end of the quarter. So maybe this gets one more popular before the end of the quarter this week. It's taking out Friday's highs. If we can close above here, I think it's going to gap up and it's greenlit to go. So that's a name I'm looking at this week. I'm not paying a lot of attention to the overall markets. As long as the markets don't fall apart, they're going to continue to find individual names to play with and rotate into them. And today it was AMD. And the other one was Netflix, which is definitely worth watching because you have a gap to fill up here. And this name does like to run into earnings sometimes. So maybe we get a little pre-market earnings run. It's got to take out this 75 area with volume to get going. Takes out 76, 77. It runs up to that 384.60. And then it's into this gap for a gap fill up towards 400. So those are a couple things I have on my radar this week as we move forward. And one last one would be IQ. And this is a high risk trade, and I'm not currently in it at the moment, but there was some big call buying that we haven't seen in this name came in today into it. But it does have the lockup tomorrow. So tomorrow we have a big lockup expiring on IQ. So I wouldn't jump ahead of it there. I'd see how it handles that. But we've seen a lot of these names lately, these recent IPOs where they come in and everybody gets shaken out or scared about the lockup and they just keep buying it as they don't want to be out of it, right? That the lockup expiration was nothing. That said, tomorrow there's about 125 million shares that eventually couldn't be sold that come out of the lockup. So we'll keep an eye on that. That said, if you're interested in what I do, I have my own service at smartoptiontrading.com. You can come over there, log in. And really, if you're interested in learning, I do teaching and mentoring and teach classes on technicals and option trades and how to trade. Or you can sign up for my real-time option flow. And in there, I do a morning setup video every day, gets you ready for the markets, tells you how I feel overall about the markets and some names I'm looking at and what we're looking at for the day. I do a nightly recap. So if you're not a day trader full-time, you'll get both of these every day delivered. And I go over what looks good from a swings perspective, how the markets felt, and overall what I did in that day. I call the option flow all day long on my Twitter feed, along with news services and trades. And we do a weekly mentoring webinar on Thursday nights. This is designed to help teach you how to trade better and ask any questions that I can't answer during the middle of the day. So with that said, David, I think we're just about done. Thanks for having me host again. I'd like to thank Lee and Jim and Roy for being on with me, and I'm going to turn it back over to you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. And I have kind of a bonus announcement thing that I think everyone should check out. If you are a regular viewer of the show, you've probably seen Matt Buckley on to moderate one of the episodes. He's doing a series of events this week to share how he trades. Top Gun Options is his website. If you want to learn more about that, just go to timingresearch.com, and there's a little message on the sidebar where you can learn about what he's doing this week. So check that out. Also, just a reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or show archives. And be sure to join us tomorrow for the next episode of Analyze Your Trade. That's going to be the 50th episode. So that'll be Tuesday, September 25th at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can always go to timingresearch.com/live to get information on the next live event or access to the live broadcast. So I just want to thank my guests again for this week. Lee Harris of EmojiTrading.com, Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com, Roy Swanson of SteadyTrader.com, and Mike Bassani of ElfShark.com and SmartOptionTrading.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.